repeatedly insisted that he was a U.S. citizen, repeatedly asked to be able to show them his U.S. passport card, right, which would show his status. They refused to look at any documentary evidence. They shoved him in a car. They drove him to a facility. They insisted, after he tried to resist over and over, on scanning his face with this dangerous technology. And only after he finally had his face scanned and finally convinced them to look at his passport card did they let him go. Now, mind you, they'd driven him 7 miles to the outskirts of Minneapolis, let him go in a Minnesota winter, told him to walk back to his office. Luckily, his family was desperately trying to find him and was on their way already to this federal office to see if he was there, and he got a ride home. But it was completely terrifying, complete violation of his rights. And this is happening every day to people in Minneapolis and around the country.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us. And people can go to our website at democracynow.org to see that video as he was pushed into the snow, as he was brutalized and then just released far away from where he was. Nathan Fried Wessler, Deputy Director with the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project. Tonight, I'll be speaking in Fort Lee, New Jersey at the Barrymore Film Center in Fort Lee after a screening of the new film Steal the Story, Please. I'll be there with the director, Tia Lesson, and the producer, Karen Renucci. Check our website at democracynow.org. There are a few tickets available. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Pacific Northwest leaders speak out strongly in the current fight over immigration and customs enforcement underway in the nation's capital. As they watch what's happening in Minneapolis, governors of Washington and Oregon say they're getting their states ready just in case the same type of ICE crackdown ends up happening here, and help for people in the Northwest whose water is poisoned. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 29th, 2026. I'm Minette Newell. Thank you for joining us tonight. President Trump's border chief says improvements could and should be made in Minneapolis and that the administration's crackdown could ease with more access to jails. But Tom Homan's comments come amid growing anger about the killings of two Americans by federal agents. And demands are coming from Democrats to separate funding for that immigration crackdown from the rest of the federal budget or risk a partial government shutdown by the end of the week. Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley is among those leading the calls for reform on the Senate floor.
I've been profoundly disturbed by what I've seen with the way that the agents from the Customs and Border Protection and ICE have acted across this country. I held 17 town halls, very conservative Republican counties, super red counties, blue counties, purple counties, and people came out from across my state to say they are shocked, that they are disturbed by what they are seeing happening across our entire nation. They came to my town halls to say one simple thing: no more must this conduct occur. And I've come to the floor now to say no more, no more rogue patrols of federal agents accosting people based on the color of their skin or their accent. No more intrusions and violations in the sensitive places like churches and mosques, synagogues, schools, daycare centers, hospitals, courthouses, and polling places. No more secret police tactics in which agents hide their personal identity, hide their agency identity, cover their face, use unmarked vans so people don't even know if they're being confronted by someone who has legitimate authority. No more federal agents arresting people, in fact, knocking down doors without warrants. There is a Constitution of the United States of America, and it says you cannot knock down doors without a warrant. It's shocking to see a memo from this president saying the executive branch can tell other parts of the executive branch they can violate the Fourth Amendment, knock down doors violating a fundamental premise of the privacy and security and freedom of the people of the United States of America. No more blatant lies from Kristi Noem. When citizen victims have been assaulted, she's quick to immediately say they're terrorists or they're would-be assassins when she has absolutely no evidence to support that. And immediately you know there'll be nothing close to an independent or fair investigation. Immediately you know she's making it up because she hasn't collected the information. And then the videos come out and they show that she lied to the American people.
And that was Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. Here's what Washington U.S. Senator Patty Murray had to say.
There's absolutely no reason for a shutdown. Five of the bills before us, covering 95% of the remaining budget, everyone agrees we can pass. And two, after the horrific killing of Alex Pretty last weekend, after so many vile, shameless lies from Trump officials, and after the flagrant abuses we have seen from ICE and CBP agents, it is painfully and brutally clear this out-of-control department must be reined in, and Congress must take action to make that happen. What we have seen happening in Minnesota and all across the country is simply un-American. Trump and Noem sent ICE and Border Patrol into Minneapolis, not on a targeted mission to retrieve actual criminals, but to go door to door, terrorizing communities and asking to see the papers of anyone who doesn't fit their idea of what an American looks like. Secretary Noem and her masked agents are haphazardly dragging off people with no criminal record, people who are here legally, people who are citizens. They are even dragging off children. We all saw them march a man, a citizen, out of his house in the freezing cold in nothing but his underwear. We all saw them cart away a five-year-old with his Spider-Man backpack and a bunny hat on. And when people protested peacefully, the Trump administration cracked down with a level of force as brutal as it was unjustified. We all heard about the family who had their car tear gassed on the way back from a basketball game and their baby stopped breathing and needed emergency care. We all watched the woman who was dragged out of her car on the way to a doctor's appointment. We all saw that unforgettable photo of an unarmed man pinned on the ground with one of Trump's federal officers pepper spraying him directly in the face. We all bore witness to the murder of Renee Good. And then last weekend, we all saw the horrific killing of Alex Pretty, a lawful observer exercising his rights, murdered in cold blood by federal agents. And how did Trump's team respond? They lied about what we all saw with our own eyes. They slandered Alex as a domestic terrorist. This man was a VA nurse. He was beloved by his patients. They falsely claimed that he wanted to massacre law enforcement.
And again, that was Washington U.S. Senator Patty Murray. Also on the Senate floor, Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden sounded the alarm about ICE abuses and renewed calls for stronger privacy protection.
For the Trump administration to stomp to death the first, the second, the fourth, the fifth, and the 10th amendments to the Constitution is not immigration enforcement. It is a totally lawless abuse of federal power. The First Amendment guarantees Americans the right to make their voices heard and to document lawlessness by the federal government. It guarantees the right to peacefully assemble and protest against those abuses. The Second Amendment guarantees the right to bear arms. Regardless of what you think about current gun law, there is no justification for murdering a man who was lawfully carrying a firearm. The Fourth Amendment protects the American people against illegal search and seizure of their property. That includes private data and information. The Fifth Amendment guarantees the right to due process. Instead, Trump's masked agents are now stopping people across the country and saying, "Papers, please." Then they get thrown into unmarked vehicles, herded into detention centers, and deported to dangerous conditions without due process. The 10th Amendment limits federal government overreach, and it protects states' rights. The recent events in Minneapolis, the murder of Renee Good and Alex Preddy, demonstrate exactly how the Trump administration is breaking the law and trashing the Constitution. Mr. Preddy was exercising his First Amendment rights to peaceably observe and record abuses by ICE agents. He was exercising his Second Amendment right to lawfully carry a firearm, and he had a permit. He was murdered by the CBP agents. Renee Good was sitting in her car, exercising her First Amendment rights to peaceably observe the actions of federal agents. She was shot and killed in broad daylight. In both instances, there's ample video evidence to disprove the Trump administration idea that these Americans were domestic terrorists who were covering up lawful killings. I warned when Trump began deploying federal agents to our cities that lives would be at risk. That's now reality. So our country needs appropriate federal law enforcement to identify and remove those who committed violent crimes. What's not needed is an American Gestapo rousting tourists, immigrants, and naturalized and native-born Americans alike with guns to their head. Shooting unarmed Americans on the street is not immigration enforcement. It's intimidation. It's a blatant attempt to suppress free speech and anybody who tries to stand up to Trump's abuse of federal power. Trump's ICE and CBP agents have clearly been trained in fear tactics instead of legitimate law enforcement. I've said it before, and I want to say it again before the Senate. Kristi Noem and the political appointees at DHS have got to go. So I'm calling on ICE and CBP agents in our streets to get out of our communities. I'm pushing for legislation to get them out of schools and hospitals, places of worship, child care centers, courthouses.
That was Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden. In Washington State, Governor Bob Ferguson says he's getting his state ready in case something like what's happening in Minneapolis comes to his state.
There was another death at the hands of federal agents in Minneapolis. The victim was a United States citizen, an ICU nurse who worked with veterans, and he was peacefully exercising his constitutional rights. And now he's dead. Over the course of the last year, including on my State of the State address, I have repeatedly spoken about how un-American it is to have masked federal agents in unmarked cars plucking people off the streets and from their workplaces. The recent events in Minnesota have taken this un-American activity to an entirely different level. Now they are killing Americans who are holding a camera. ICE is, to be blunt, completely and totally out of control. To say that I'm angry is not the right word. I don't have the right word for how I feel about it. I'm sure how Attorney General Brown feels about it, or how people all across our country feel about it. It's outrageous in the extreme, and it has to stop. As angry as we both are, we are focused on preparing to the fullest extent possible for a similar escalation by ICE against our will here in Washington State. Attorney General Brown and I cannot stop ICE from being in our state. We don't have that power. On the other hand, we are not passive bystanders to what is happening, and we are prepared to use every tool at our disposal to mitigate against the harms inflicted by ICE. No state in this country has a governor and attorney general who have the level of experience the two of us have confronting the Trump administration and defeating the Trump administration. And we are each blessed with excellent teams who have deep experience in this area as well. The memo to ICE agents instructing them to use force to enter people's homes without a warrant from a judge is outrageous. It is disturbing. It is deeply un-American, and it is most certainly unconstitutional. Attorney General Brown and I signed a joint letter to Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. That letter covers multiple points, but importantly, it makes clear that the directive in that memo is certainly unconstitutional. In short, ICE cannot authorize itself to break into somebody's home. We emphasize that if ICE attempts any such unconstitutional measures in Washington State, we will use every legal option available to us to hold the federal government accountable. We also make clear in our letter that we will use every legal option available to hold individual ICE agents accountable as well. Washington State remains the national leader in holding the Trump administration accountable to the rule of law. That important work will continue when it comes to ICE. The Constitution matters. We will defend it and ensure the people of our state are safe and secure in their homes. I'm making some changes in our organization to help us coordinate our efforts in regard to ICE activity in Washington State. As in September, I signed an executive order creating our immigration subcabinet, which helps state agencies coordinate on issues related to immigration. This group is doing important work. The issues that led me to create this group have only gotten worse since that time, and we have obviously reached a new level of crisis. Issues impacting immigrants and refugees are changing every day. Sarah Peterson, she's the chief of the Office of Immigrant and Refugee Assistance, will begin attending my cabinet meetings. Having Sarah in our cabinet meetings will help ensure we are coordinating as a state and between agencies to respond quickly and thoroughly to new threats from the federal government. I also recently hired a senior advisor specifically for immigrant and refugee issues. David Kim will handle our work on immigration policy. He is working with communities all across our state to make sure their concerns are elevated to my team and to my office. Third, I'm aware that Governor Walz called up the National Guard in Minnesota to help address the crisis created by ICE. I met yesterday with General Welsh of our National Guard. We discussed what is happening in Minnesota. I will not go into detail about that conversation for reasons I hope you understand, but I want the people of our state to know that I'll take whatever steps are necessary to keep our residents safe.
That's Washington Governor Bob Ferguson. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek says she's also making preparations.
Every single time the Trump administration sows chaos in our state, my goal is to respond with facts, in coordination with our partners, and in a way that responds to community needs. And that's what we're doing here today. The White House described that federal agents will make mistakes as they fulfill the president's unlawful agenda to divide our nation. But these aren't mistakes. The president and his agencies are intentionally working to scare, bully, and traumatize our immigrant and refugee communities and our Black, Brown, and Indigenous communities. It's not a mistake when federal agents show up outside our schools when parents are dropping off or picking up their kids. It is not a mistake when federal agents conceal their faces and identities when they arrest our neighbors and their family members. It's not a mistake when communities where Oregon's construction and ag workforce live are targeted. And it's not a mistake when federal agents start using lethal force and ratchet up the tensions throughout our communities. These are not mistakes. These are actions that require a coordinated response to stand up for people, human beings, and that is our immigrant and refugee community neighbors. Oregon is home to over 400,000 immigrants, representing 13% of our state's labor force. Immigrants and refugees are our friends, they are our neighbors, they are the parents of our children in our schools. Today I heard from representatives from communities across Oregon who are facing harsher and harsher immigration enforcement activities, activities that ignore lawful, customary practices and truly undermine our community safety. Some of the things I heard today is the level of fear and anxiety in our communities across the state. Immigrants and refugees are absolutely essential to our economic growth in the state and our economic activity. There is tremendous impact on our children and families. Our children are being traumatized by the activities in our communities. We need to stop the violence and the cruelty that is coming from our federal government because it's not going to keep our communities safe. All immigrants are a part of our community and are essential to Oregon's success. And those immigrant communities are all across Oregon, everywhere. And they have built our state, and we need to protect each other. As a grandchild of an immigrant, I know we are all immigrants in this country, unless you are a descendant or a member of First Peoples in our country. We are all immigrants. And to say that those immigrants are somehow not worth defending or standing up for is wrong and un-American. Our country was built by immigrants. It will thrive through the success of our immigrant communities, and we need to change what is happening in our state and in our country. As governor, I'm committed and will continue to stay committed every single day to protect our families across the state in every way I can. One of the things that I have directed in state government is for our Office of Immigration and Refugee Advancement to understand the problem on the ground. That office has traveled to the state and met with over 40 community partners. Under the leadership of Jessica Ventura, the Office of Immigration and Refugee Advancement has done a strategic planning process. And one of the messages that has come through very clear is this. We have to improve coordination between our community partners and our state agencies to combat the confusion and misinformation and delayed response and the very fear that our families are experiencing. I believe we can always do better and do more to connect people and protect them, and we're going to do that. Here's what we know. Families are losing access to basic services because of increased enforcement activity driven by, I would believe, unlawful quotas from the federal government. People of all citizenship statuses are avoiding workplaces, schools, clinics, and public buildings.
Free testing is available for some Washington state residents whose wells may have been exposed to nitrates from industrial dairy waste. Isabel Charlet reports.
Residents in the lower Yakima Valley whose wells may have been polluted by nitrates have access to free testing and water filters thanks to a Washington nonprofit. Industrial dairies in the area housing hundreds of thousands of cows produce massive piles of manure, and when that waste is not disposed of properly, it can leach nitrate pollution into nearby wells. Amy Van Son is with the Clean Drinking Water Project, which uses settlements from lawsuits leveled at these dairies to pay for testing and water filtration for local residents.
People don't know there's a problem. Right? You could be drinking excess nitrates and have no idea that there's any issue. So that's why we urge people to give us a call, give us an email, and we can get your water tested.
Many wells in the lower Yakima Valley have tested much higher than the safe limit set by the EPA. Van Son says excess nitrates in the body are linked to reproductive and thyroid issues, as well as cancer. Residents can visit cleandrinkingwaterproject.org for free testing information. Van Son says many residents of the lower Yakima Valley are working class and Hispanic, and the impacts from pollution they are facing echo a pattern of environmental racism.
We see this all over the country, that communities of color, indigenous communities, are the sort of sacrifice zone for this and other industrial pollution.
Van Son says if someone suspects their well might be contaminated with nitrates, they shouldn't rely on store-bought test strips, as they are not accurate. So far, the Clean Drinking Water Project has helped at least 150 homes access clean water. But Van Son says there could still be hundreds more in the area. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
A new report from the GLAAD Extremism Reporting Tracker finds that harassment against transgender people is up, as are attacks against local government, even as overall incidents are down. Suzanne Potter has the story.
Incidents are down 20% year over year, but attacks targeting transgender people are up 14%. Andre Wade with Silver State Equality notes this comes in a year when President Donald Trump has signed 4 executive orders targeting LGBTQ+ people.
Any hate crime is terrible. When it's based on sexual orientation, gender identity, it's even harder to take in. And we just wish that the anti-LGBTQ+ rhetoric will simmer down, especially that directed at transgender folks.
In April 2024, a Las Vegas man was accused of a hate crime, allegedly shooting a BB gun at his neighbors while shouting an anti-LGBTQ slur. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Senator Schumer calls for reforms to ICE so Democrats can pass a funding bill, while some Republicans seem open to dealing with the Department of Homeland Security budget on its own. The Senate also considers tighter ballot restrictions in the SAVE Act, and health care costs are burdening working Americans. More on the stories impacting our democracy in today's edition of 2026 Talks.
Republicans must work with Democrats to find legislative solutions to restore order and public safety. Congress has the authority and the moral obligation to act. What's missing is Republican will to act.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York says Democrats want common sense reforms for ICE before approving Homeland Security funding. He cites an end to masks and roving patrols, tighter rules on warrants, an enforced code of conduct, and body cameras that are turned on. Democrats are blocking a multi-agency budget package that includes DHS after the killing of Alex Preddy and Renee Nicole Good in Minneapolis. Marotta Wauda with the New York Immigration Coalition says ICE's victims deserve a tougher stance, not compromises with a federal agency that has, quote, murdered people in the street and depends on the the cooperation of local police.
Senator Schumer must unambiguously call for ICE and Border Patrol to get out of our cities, an end to racial profiling, and the cancellation of all 287G agreements between ICE and local law enforcement.
Some Senate Republicans say they would be willing to deal with DHS funding separately, which many Democrats could accept. A partial government shutdown would begin Saturday if the agencies aren't funded. Senate Majority Leader John Thune says Democrats should continue what he calls productive talks. Meanwhile, the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility, or SAVE Act, could come up for a Senate vote soon. The bill requires proof of citizenship, typically a birth certificate or a passport, when registering to vote or updating a registration. Most Americans don't have a passport. Thune backs the bill, but says it needs some changes.
It includes a requirement that you be a citizen to register to vote, but it doesn't include a requirement that to vote you be a resident. So in other words, if you're going to have what we call voter ID or photo ID when somebody goes into the ballot box to vote, that's not currently covered in the bill.
But voting rights watchdogs warn even legitimate votes could be questioned. The FBI just raided a Georgia election warehouse storing ballots key to President Donald Trump's unsupported claims he actually won the state in 2020. This month, Trump said, quote, people will soon be prosecuted for what they did during the election. That in spite of related claims repeatedly failing in court. Congress has yet to take action on the health policy steps Trump proposed as ACA subsidies were expiring. As expected, those sharply rising insurance premiums have priced millions out of coverage. Allentown, Pennsylvania's Lynn Weeder says she works 80 hours a week as a caregiver, but without the enhanced ACA tax credits, her premiums went from $400 to $700 a month.
I have always made just a little bit too much money to get much assistance, but not quite enough to get by. And so the tax credits are what was keeping the insurance affordable for me.
Meanwhile, a new report from the Independent Medicare Payment Advisory Commission finds federal overpayments to private Medicare Advantage plans could total $76 billion this year. The commission blames coding practices, which make patients appear sicker than they are and higher payments than needed for patient care. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
A hung jury in the trial for NDN Collective founder Tilson. A drop in Alaska Native overdose deaths in 2024 following a record 2023. And the U.S. Mint releases a dollar coin honoring a heroine, Polly Cooper. Antonia Gonzalez has today's National Native News.
There was a hung jury in Rapid City, South Dakota, Wednesday in a case against founder and CEO of the Native-led organization Indian Collective, Nick Tilson. After 3 days of hearings, a mistrial was declared. Tilson's accused of assaulting a police officer in 2022. He's facing charges for aggravated and simple assault on a law enforcement officer and obstruction of a law enforcement officer, facing 26 years in prison. In a statement, Tilson said he's grateful for everyone who stood with him, adding, the fight's not over. The state has 45 days to notify the judge of intentions to retry the case. The rate of Alaskans dying from drug overdoses declined by 5% in 2024 compared to the year before, including a decline for Indigenous Alaskans, according to a recent state report. That's a welcome reduction after the state saw its highest number of overdose deaths on record in 2023. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports.
The United States has seen significant declines in overdose death rates over the past 2 years. And now Alaska could be seeing the start of a similar reduction, according to experts. Teresa Walton is a manager for Alaska's Office of Substance Misuse and Addiction Prevention. She says the decline is good news for the state, even though the state's reduction is much smaller than the national one.
I think we're on the right track.
And she says the decline is likely partly due to state efforts. The report notes the state distributed 45,000 naloxone kits in 2024 with fentanyl test strips. The state has mobile crisis teams in Anchorage, Matsu, Fairbanks, Ketchikan, and Juneau. And Alaska has expanded access to medication-assisted treatment, recovery housing, and therapeutic courts. But Welton says there's more work to do, and it will require a collaborative effort among the state, tribal organizations, and local communities.
Even with nationally, everybody is trying to look for that magic fix to start decreasing these deaths. And I think it's just a combination of supporting communities to address these issues at a community level and emphasizing prevention.
She says it's expensive to build treatment facilities, so increasing access to buprenorphine and other medications for substance use disorders could help prevent overdose deaths. She says Alaska struggles with having enough resources to provide treatment for substance use disorders, partly because rural residents must travel for treatment. According to the report, fentanyl is Alaska's deadliest drug. It contributed to more than 70% of overdose deaths in 2024. But Welton says it's crucial to note that many of the overdoses with fentanyl also included one or more other substances. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
This week, the U.S. Mint released this year's Native American $1 coin featuring Polly Cooper. The Oneida Indian Nation says she's recognized for bringing food and supplies to her homelands in upstate New York to Army troops at Valley Forge during the winter of 1777-78. The tribe says recognizing Cooper and the tribe as allies is timely as the U.S. prepares to observe the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. The coin depicts Polly Cooper with General George Washington as she holds a basket of corn. Cooper stayed at the camp through the winter and taught soldiers how to prepare corn and cook for them in harsh conditions to help ensure their survival. Oneida Indian Nation Representative Ray Halbritter says the Oneida people became America's first allies on some of the bloodiest battlefields of the Revolutionary War. According to the tribe, nation members continue the legacy of military service, serving in every major American conflict since then. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Glad to have you with us here on the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 29th, 2026.
This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes
Althea Billings and Isabel Charlet.
The producer is Annette Newell and our engineer is Otto. Our director of evening news is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth, up next.